FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. So we're always looking around for mining companies on the move, resource companies that really have something extra, that are really well poised, well positioned for the future. And we've got a new sponsor and a company that really fills the bill there. The name of the company is Zinc One, and we're really pleased to have the CEO of the company on, Jim Walchek. And Jim, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to this.
Hey, me too. And so Zinc One, relatively new company, just started up recently.
It is. It's the concept was to focus in on zinc to give the investors that are interested in this metal. And, you know, the metal is actually the third largest industrial metal in the world, behind iron and copper. And most people don't get that. But zinc's day in the sun has arrived, and we felt very strongly about that. And the company was formed to focus in and take advantage of that, right? And not get it, diluted by looking at different types of projects that have zinc in it. This is a zinc-focused resource company, period. Mm-hmm. So we looked at acquiring projects that aren't greenfields. Our focus right now is to get projects that fit into my wheelhouse, which is basically mine development. So we're looking for projects that have a resource or can be brought into a resource status very quickly and that are in really, really good jurisdictions. And by that, I mean you have to be able to permit these and get them up and in production in a short manner. So you're looking for mining-friendly countries. And currently, we're just looking in four, possibly five areas. We're looking in certain provinces in Canada, certain states in the United States. We're looking in Mexico, Chile, and especially Peru. Those jurisdictions are north-south, so you're not fighting the time zones. Mm-hmm. And they're in friendly jurisdictions that understand mining, that get a lot of their gross domestic product from the mining, and you can permit these things, and the permitting is well understood. So it's a very good, what I would say is a very good model to go after, and not banging your head against the wall trying to make something happen in other jurisdictions which might have a great deposit, but you'll never get them permitted and get them into production.
Yeah, there's all too many of those stories out there. Incredible ore grades, and yet try to get something done in the jurisdiction, and it just doesn't happen. So your experience,
yeah.
I mean, you've got 36 years in the minerals industry.
I do, and a lot of it is in the gold sector, but in the mining side of things. I was fortunate that when I graduated from school back in Eastern Canada, I ended up in a well-known mining community in Timmins. And Noranda I don't know if you're familiar with that company, but it was a very large mining company at the time. And its training ground was in Timmins, and they had two mills, and they had five underground mines and two open pits feeding the two mills. So it was a great opportunity as a young engineer to go up, and I got to work in all the different five mines and just about every engineering capacity that you can imagine, all the way from a project engineer, ventilation engineer, planning engineer, all the way up through to being the chief mining engineer. So I had a very, very good background in that. And then I went over to Africa, in West Africa, for 5 years as a chief mining engineer in a turnaround operation. It was very difficult conditions, but we managed to turn things around. And we put it up for sale because it was then a good operating mine. And Gold Fields out of South Africa basically took it out. And that was the overall objective for the government of Ghana, is to prop these mines up, get them fixed up, make them presentable, and then be able to let large firms come in there and take them over. And then still in operations, I left. And I came back to Timmins for another mine that I'd never worked in with a different company as the manager of mining and the manager of engineering. I had two roles there. And that was really good experience too. So again, just moving up and overseeing the open pit and the underground as well as the engineering and geology. They then asked me to move to head office, which I did for a while. And from there, I got recruited by another company that had a great project in Tanzania. So I'm back to Africa. And with this company, it was mostly to do the feasibility study on the mine and then to go build it. So it was a wonderful opportunity moving from operations into mine design. and then into construction. And while it was a very successful study, and we were actually in construction when Barrick came in and took the mine over, basically took the company over. And they asked me to stay on, and I went over to Africa as I took a little bit of a demotion for the opportunity to actually go build and see how things happen. Because being involved in a design, you never really get to see where you succeeded and where you failed in your mine design. And that's a rare, rare opportunity where you can get to do that, design something and then actually go build it. Yeah. So we did that, and it was successful. It was a very, very good operation. We came in under budget. I think it was about a $200 million capex on that. At the end of it, I had about 700 people working for me with the contractors, maintenance people, mining people, engineering people. It was a wonderful opportunity. And after that, I left Africa and got into the junior mining space here back in Vancouver, into a company that had gold and uranium. And then the next company I came and ran was a company that was into potash in Saskatchewan, province of Saskatchewan here in Canada. And that's where my story kind of ends with those guys and begins here with Zinc One. For various reasons, the new management came into that company. And even though they've asked me to stay on as an advisor because of my background in it, the new money coming in wish to have their own people on the board, and that's very understandable in these markets. Sure. But then the people that actually brought the shell company for this potash company, I stayed in touch with. They're the people behind the Zinc One, the beginning of it. And they phoned me up 1 week after they announced a management change at the old company and said, Jim, we have this concept. We'd like to run by you. And we would like you to run it if you think it's a good concept. We've been together. We've known each other now for 8 years. Why don't we have a chat? So that's what we did. And they explained this idea of focusing in on zinc. And then I started doing a little bit of background on zinc because I didn't really know that much about it. And the more that I read, the more excited I got. And the fact is that they're designing the company around my wheelhouse, which is not exploration. It's basically taking a resource and then putting it into production through feasibility, and then, from preliminary economic assessment to pre-feasibility to feasibility to feed engineering right through to the construction and then the operations. So that's my wheelhouse. Everything prior to doing study work is, that's for the talented geologists out there that can find and develop ore resources or delineate ore resources.
Right.
So that's kind of my background. The people that I associate with also have a similar background. The people that are with Forrester Metals, for example, their CEO is very similar to me. And he wants, I think he will play a big part in this. His name is Bill Williams. He's a very talented individual, and he's run operations as well. He considers himself to be a mine developer. And then on the other side, the focusing in is another guy that we have, Dr. Simon Desjardins, that I worked with before, and I asked Simon to be part of this team. And his specialty is basically mine design and construction. So he's always basically worked both sides. He has very little operational experience, but he has a tremendous amount of experience in doing feasibility work and then in the construction side of things. So that's kind of our high-level talent when it comes to on the technical side and getting things done. Essentially over 100 years of, I would say, hands-on mine design, mine construction, and mine operations. So that's the people that we have fit the model that we're generating for, specifically for the Zinc One. And that's what we've done right now. And if I could digress sure. a little bit and talk a little bit about the projects, would that be all right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Tell us about the projects. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, we have two right now that we have three, but one is not sort of in our focus. It's sort of a legacy property that we have in northern Saskatchewan. But we have a good zinc project here in the province of BC. It's high grade, but it's at the stage where it does have to have it has a resource on it, but I need to basically have that resource brought into a 43-101 compliance resource, which we need for the investors. And it's a little bit, it needs more work and more feasibility studies done on it and economic analysis is done on it. But it's in a very good jurisdiction, so that was one. But the one that we really are excited about in particular is called the Bangura project, which is in northeastern Peru. And to get that project, we actually had to buy out Forrester. And that's where we're in the middle of closing that deal right now. We've made an offer, and the shareholders, of course, are very happy with it. And our shareholders appear to be quite happy with it. And it's a project that's sitting up in the Andes. It's not that high. It's only about 7,200 feet, I think. I was just there, and it's a temperate climate. It has a wet and dry season, but by and large, it's a very good jurisdiction. And we really like it. There's a paved road up to it, except for the last, say, 15 kilometers. And that's a good dirt road that gets us to the project. So it's in a very good jurisdiction. But the beauty of this thing is that if you compare it, say to a gold mine, if you want to go to underground, for example, in gold, you better have a half-decent grade. And by half-decent grade, I mean is typically it should be at least a third of an ounce or better. Mm-hmm. So at $1,200, that means your rock is worth about $400 or more. We have a zinc deposit, a zinc oxide deposit, sitting on surface that grades about 20% zinc. So how do you relate that? Well, the way I like to relate it is let's compare it to a gold mine. If it's 20% zinc, and I think zinc's about $1.28 or $1.29 right now. Let's say it's $1.25 at 20% zinc, and grade, chances are the grades are going to be better than that because history has shown that with this deposit. That's equivalent to about $560 to $600 a ton. So that's like a half ounce mine. Those are underground gold grades, but it's sitting on surface. And it's just a fabulous deposit. So it's there. It has a good historical resource. It's been looked at many times. The company that had it before was an industrial minerals company. They actually started mining it, but they didn't want to spend all that money on the CapEx side of things until they really understood the metallurgy. So they used a well-known technology, which involves the use of a large kiln to heat things up. And what you do in a large kiln like that is essentially you heat it up to over 900 degrees Celsius and it vaporizes the zinc, and you collect the zinc as a vapor and then precipitate it out as a zinc oxide. Right. This is conventional technology designed first and operated first out of Germany back in 1910. So it's not like we're inventing the wheel, which I love. Sure. I don't really want to get into some research and development. I want something that's tried and true, easy to understand, and easy to operate. And what they did is that they ended up trucking their ore 600 kilometers to where this kiln was, because it's also used in the cement industry. So they basically cleaned up their cement plant, got rid of all the cement-orientated things around it, and made it into a metallurgical plant for zinc. And they were mining it, and they were fairly successful at it until, of course, that was 2007 when they started up, and then they ran into 2008. And the prices of zinc just collapsed, and they basically had to shut things down. So they, over the course from 2008 to now, have reverted back to staying with their core business. So this was sort of a side process, if you will, to their main core business. So they let it go, and it reverted back to the original owners. And Forrester did a great deal with the owners, and they got an option to it. And then when Zinc One got started, this came on our radar screen very quickly. And we looked at it, and we tried doing a deal with Forrester for the project, and it worked out best just to take over the company itself. And that's why we've done it. And we're in the process of going through the paperwork right now. Yeah. So we're pretty excited about it. But while we're waiting for all this paperwork to come through, I'm working hand in glove with the people at Forrester. So we're looking at what types of studies need to be done. We're looking at what type of drilling needs to be outlined. We're looking at getting permits lined up with the government so that we can start our drilling, taking a good look at the community and taking a look at the environmental issues that if there are any that we have to deal with. So when the takeover happens, and we believe it's going to happen by the end of April, so we're pretty excited by that, and that's going to give an opportunity for investors to see really what we can do going forward after that. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't stop us from looking at other projects as well, as long as they fit into our very constrained criteria of being able to find something which is mineable, which can be brought into production in short order and in a good mining jurisdiction. So
it's a very disciplined approach, and you're not going to deviate from it, obviously. So what about the market, the international global market for zinc? What's where do you see that now, and where is it heading?
I can give you my interpretation and what I've read about things. I'm not an economist, I'm a mining engineer by trade, but I do know a little bit about zinc, and let me share some things with you about the metal itself, and then things that I've read. And I tend to read things from big companies such as Teck, who are a big zinc producer. But if you take a look at the metal itself, it's used in many, many different things. I never would have thought that it's used in paint and batteries, plastics, rubber products, pharmaceuticals. There's a litany of things that it's used in, but the majority of it, where we're talking 89% of it, is industrial use, in particular for galvanizing steel to make sure that it doesn't rust.
Right.
That accounts for about 50% of it. Die casting is 8%. alloys, another 14, and brass or bronze, it's used another 20%. So that's 90% of the zinc usage is really industrial, with the other 10% into the more exotic uses of it. And then if you want to take a look at globally, who is the big users? Well, China is a massive user, and they were an exporter. And now they are an importer, which is fascinating. I think what happened there, from what I can read, is that they shut down over 20 of their mines due to environmental issues. So their version of the EPA came in and said, look, you are basically spewing toxic materials out into the environment. The population around here is getting really upset. You can't do this anymore. We have to follow some pretty strict guidelines. And they basically shut these things down. And it's going to be hard for them to eventually, they probably will get those mines back in place, but they have a lot of work to get them to that stage where they'll be able to do that. And then you combine that with the lack of, the loss of a couple of big mines, the Lachine mine in Ireland and the Century mine in Australia. So you're getting kind of a double whammy here. You're having less and less production, and production has decreased. Consumption has remained steady or has actually gone up a little bit. So that's the reason why the price of zinc has gone up. And if you take a look at the LME stockpiles, they're typically, for the last 25 years, there's about 42 days of stockpile worldwide in the system.
That's
now dropped down to, but now it's dropped down to 29 days, and it's continuing to drop. So I think there's a kind of a little worry going on there in the zinc market right now. Where are we going to get the rest of the zinc to keep going? Because it is getting very tight. And when, if you follow a company like Teck and what they're doing, they get the majority by far of their zinc is coming out of the Red Dog mine. And if you read into their management discussion analysis here that I managed to get my hands on, it's pretty interesting. Their production for 2017 is going to be around 555,000 tons, but they're forecasting a 42,000 ton drop from 2018 through to 2020. They're forecasting that drop because the ore is getting, the grades are going down, and the ore is actually getting harder. So it's going to take more money to put more energy into the grinding of that, because it's not, it doesn't grind as easy. Plus, it's the grades are not as high as what they once were. So that's another decrease. And Teck is a very big producer of zinc, and will have a slight impact. And as I said, the stockpiles that you're getting, and particularly at the London Metal Exchange, are very clear cut. They're going down. And I am unaware of any new mines coming on stream, in particular with zinc, out there. So I imagine there are a lot of people who are scrambling right now to do that. But again, from an investor's point of view, what are the jurisdictions? How far away from getting their environmental permits and their mining licenses and all that stuff? You really got to take a look at that. And that's why, in Peru, I think we're a little blessed. It's a mining regime that was overhauled, and the Canadian expertise went down there to help out the government. They were asked to do that. So the permitting regime down there, although not identical to what's in Canada, is similar. So it's something that myself and our team are very comfortable with down there. That combined with, I think, 50% of the gross national product is coming from the mining sector. So it's well understood. It's liked. When I went met with the Ministry of Energy and Mines, and I met with the director down there, when I told him that I wasn't interested in exploring, he sort of looked at me and I said, no, we're interested in actually building and developing mines. And he thought that was fabulous. He thought that was just fabulous. So we still will do things correctly and in the right sequence, but it's nice to know that you're in a country that wants your business and wants you to develop these things and bring mines into fruition, right?
Yeah.
It's a very good, like I say, when we sat down and formed Zinc One, it was done with a very clear-cut guidelines of what we wanted to do. And like you said, is that we'll stay rigid with what we're going to do. We're not looking at exotic places with great grades. We want to be able to make sure that whatever we get, we can get into production. I like to think I've been through too many cycles, and I want to use those the experience that I've got right now. Like you say, it's actually 38 years of mining experience and cycles, and I don't want to take my foot off the gas pedal. I don't want to get relaxed about it. I'm under the impression, I've told my people, I want something in production in 2 to 3 years. That's the goal.
Wow. To move that's it as ambitious. Fast as we can. Ambitious goals. And you're on the acquisition trail as well. So a lot of amazing things happening at the company. For a company that just came into being last year, I mean, you're really hitting the ground moving. You know, it's always nice to see.
Thank you. It's for me, I'm having fun. This is my wheelhouse. This is why I got into the industry.
Yeah.
I like the people that I'm working with. The only rule that I had with these guys, other than they had to be talented, was they had to park their ego at the door. You know, I'm not interested in that. It's just a sole goal, work together and basically piggyback on each other's talents and do whatever's necessary and to help each other out to get the goal, which is to get into production.
Yeah.
And to do it safely and cleanly.
And I had no idea that the worldwide supply inventory of zinc was so precarious. It's one of those things, it's a base metal you just take for granted that there's enough of it, and there always will be. But to think that 29 days supply is nothing, it's really nothing. That's just-in-time inventory management, basically. At work.
You're exactly right. Exactly right.
So amazing. So it's been real interesting and enlightening speaking with you, Jim. I mean, that sounds like the company's really on the right track. If you want more information, you should go to the website zincone.com. That's Z-I-N-C, not K-O-N-E.com. The symbol on the TSX venture, you got the best symbol in town, Z. I don't know how you got that, but that's easy to find. On the Frankfurt.
Absolutely.
On the Frankfurt, it's RH33. And on the OTC, it's ZZZOF. So sounds like you really got some exciting times ahead here, Jim. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.